generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coastside, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHMB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond. This is the place for coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalyn.
Good morning, Coastside. Ruben is not here today. He's off doing some fun stuff, but I have one of my most favorite fill-in guest co-host, Miss Michelle Dragony.
Hello there.
Good morning. And we've decided in honor of Ruben that we are going to do our version of the air quality report. So let's just take a second, look outside.
And we drove here together so we can report all the way from the Outer Harbor to south of Half Moon Bay. And there is air out there.
Yes, and it smells good.
Smells good. There was that little part, you know, right there at the Kelly and Highway 1. There was a really big, bad truck, and it stunk for about a block. But then we were good.
Yes, so air quality is of quality today. So there you go.
So breathe in and breathe out. There was this guy, John Lynch, used to run around in a Uncle Sam hat in his little scooter.
Yes.
And this is back in the day, pre-COVID. And we would both go to Starbucks, and I would see him there, and I'd say, "Hi, John, how's it going?" And he's, "Well, I'm breathing in, and I'm breathing out." And I was like, "Well, that's a high standard there."
Yes. And if anybody would like to call in and chat with me and Michelle today, 650-477-1244. As Michelle and I like to do, we're completely winging it. So if you have anything that you want to talk about,
ask Buzz.
Yes. And definitely call in. We're open to talk about any topic.
And if you don't call in, we'll just keep talking because there's always something to talk about.
Yes.
Between the two of us.
Yes.
We know an awful lot about the coastside.
We do, between the two of us. So is there anything, and if anybody, I can't imagine that anybody listening to us right now does not know about Coastside Buzz,
We've got news. I specialize in public agency news. I watch all of their videos, and I mean every single agency on the coast, I watch. It's all in my head. And not only that, I read the staff reports, too, and the attachments.
Which... it's not uncommon for an agenda to be 100 pages.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I have to put aside like 4 hours to read the Coastal Commission stuff. And you would say, well, why is that relevant? Everything that the Coastal Commission is relevant to a city that is 100% in the coastal zone.
Mm-hmm.
And to that point, I haven't posted it yet because I'm still waiting for the community development director to help me with the title. But the Planning Commission meeting this last week, Half Moon Bay
Planning?
Half Moon Bay, yep. Yes. And Leslie Lacko is the Community Development Director, and so she's the one who sort of leads the meeting and reports to the commission. And in this particular case, we have the housing element.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the state of California.
I think a lot of people are aware that the state, via Mr. Newsom, wagged their finger at Half Moon Bay and 14 other jurisdictions.
She gave what was probably a 7 to 10 minute recitation on all of the letters, the press releases, and the sort of like interfaces that they've had with HCD.
Which is the housing
community development department for the state of California. So you've got the HCD and you've got the CCC, the California Coastal Commission. And literally, because city of Half Moon Bay is 100% in the coastal zone, not like Pacifica where part of it is not in the coastal zone and you can build more easily there. The county does not want to build housing element stuff here on the coast. if they can help it.
Which maybe we can jump into this later, but I heard yesterday, and so I need you to fact check me. I heard yesterday that the county has put a halt to building permits until January 2028 in the unincorporated areas, which for us would be anything north of the Half Moon Bay city line, up until the tunnel, and then anything south of the line,
right,
all the way through Pescadero.
And I was in a Caltrans meeting yesterday, and they were trying to, how do we refer to this area? And, you know, North Half Moon Bay or what? And then all of the coastsiders went, coast side. So that's mid coast side. Mm-hmm. And that'll be El Granada, Moss Beach, and Montara. And yeah, there will still be planning that can be done.
Yeah.
But no, and so, you know, if you want to build something, get your plans in. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's not like the system is completely, you know, down. But what happened was they approved 71 units for Cypress Point. And that's an 100% affordable housing. And it's part of that. It's part of the housing element, you know, for the county. It's part of developing more housing. You could question whether or not it's the right place, et cetera, et cetera. But that's what it is. And so 71, you're only allowed, I think, 40 per year. So as you start doing the math, there's going to be a couple of years where nobody's going to be able to build. Now, they're still building housing. They're just not building single family homes.
So if somebody wants to remodel, will they be able to do that?
You're getting a little technical there, but I would say if it's an interior remodel and you're not like adding any kind of housing, like an ADU, mm-hmm. I think the ADUs, well, they're supposed to be ministerial. So that's a good question. That's a good, Tim Pond, are you out there? Can you call in and tell us?
477-1244.
And I know the ADUs are becoming easier and easier. To build. They want it to be sort of ministerial, but I mean, that also has infrastructure, you know, ramifications with water and sewer. So Sid Young, she went to the CSDA, which is the California Special Districts Association Week.
And we should note, Sid is on the Montara Water Board.
That's right. Thank you. And so she went up there because she's always trying to learn. You know,
yeah.
So she's really new to actually being on a board. I've had this feeling about the housing element. People ask me, how does it work? And I go, times two. So when I first started 8 years ago, before in cycle five, it was 240 houses that Half Moon Bay had to build. And then the next cycle, we're in cycle six, it is 480 houses. And I said, how did they come up with that? I mean, because I'm an English teacher, and all I could see was times two.
Yeah.
And I said, well, that's the rubric? Well, that's just it's just nonsense.
And we should note for anybody who might not be familiar that California has these cycles. And in the cycle, they tell municipalities throughout California how many homes they have to build to accommodate for the population that they are foreseeing needing homes.
Right.
So it is not based on, well, whatever California is using as its metric, many, many municipalities run into issues because it's not like somebody from that department of the state of California is sitting on the coast side taking an account of how much ag land we have, how much open space land we have, all of these different things. And they're just like, whatever their metric is, you have to, dear Half Moon Bay, you have to put in 480 units. Now, I will say, and I think I've said this before, I do think that the coast side is short on apartment complexes.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was something I ran into when I was trying to move here. So I personally think that we could use a couple apartment complexes in places that they would not be of detriment. Please don't come for me. I'm not a developer.
Well, I think this is getting back to Sid's comment. I don't think there's anybody on the coast that wouldn't mind more housing as long as the infrastructure went with it. And
yeah.
So she's at CSDA, and I got to tell you, I just love it when the public goes out and mixes it up with the government, you know.
Yeah.
And she comments a lot, so if you listen to meetings, you'll hear her. So she's very involved, and she knows stuff. And so she's in there. They tour the legislator people, and the aides come out and talk to them and stuff. And so they're in this room with the housing wonks. And it's a place where all of the special district people that are visiting can put a comment, you know, or a question in. And so she puts her question in, and her question is, why do you keep shoving housing down our throat without funding this mandate?
Mm-hmm.
And if the state had joined this mandate with infrastructure, which needs to be improved statewide,
mm-hmm.
you know, water and sewer and roads and traffic. Right now, Cypress Point, the county is going to have to come up with the cost of the Carlos Street. Too narrow. And I remember when
And let's pause for 1 second and explain funding the mandate. So basically, California tells the county in Half Moon Bay how many housing units they have to add.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to, you know, the developers would be the ones taking on that cost. Mm-hmm. However,
No, they don't. If it's 100% affordable, it's mid-pen housing is the housing.
Right, but they're a developer.
But they have AB 1449 with how it got passed, and they don't have to do anything for infrastructure. They do have to keep.
That's what I'm saying. But so the developers have to would take on the cost of the actual building of the thing, but mm-hmm. nobody is mandated to take on the cost of making sure there's water there, making sure there's sewer there. If there's water and sewer
a road for fire
and road there, it could be there, but if it's deficient for the new level of number of cars that are going to mm-hmm. be driving there, number of people that are going to be living there, currently the California is not helping municipalities in any way cover the cost of beefing up those infrastructure items to go with the housing that they are telling us we have to put in.
Right. And then so it got approved with the San Mateo County Planning Commission, and Lisa Ketchum, she's passed away since then, but she got the county to come out and explain why this is going to go through, and it's a state overtake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clear that, you know, they checked in with the sewer and the water, but I also follow the fire board. And because I say I watch every agency meeting because it's all interrelated. And yeah. So I'm hearing the fire marshal say, well, we can't give any of the 18. This is just 12 months, maybe 15 months ago. We can't sign off on any of the 18 permits for Cypress Point because we don't have a road that gets us there.
Mm-hmm.
So Carlos is the road that the county decided they spend $30,000 on some signs saying no parking so that it would be like cleared for fire. No. That was a temporary thing. So what I just discovered, and nobody's talked about it, but there is a Carlos plan that they came up with in 2025, in June of 2025. And I just sent it to Clemens Heldmeyer because he's Montara Water and Sanitary District, because I'm looking at the plans, and I see no sewer call-outs, no water call-outs. And I can't believe that there isn't water and sewer along Carlos because there's houses there.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this is the state and the developer doing things to us. And this is, Mid-Coast has no legislative body except for the Mid-Coast Community Council. So they're even more vulnerable because yep. people will just step on you. But thank goodness, you know, I don't know if everybody remembers, we had Coastside Eco. Coastside Eco sued over the Cypress Point, you know, because it's 71 units. It'll bring 500 people there. The entire population of Moss Beach is currently 500. It will double the population with this one development. And, you know, the complaint is, well, there's no bus stops, there's no bus service. I will say this, though. The Moss Beach market just changed hands.
Mm.
And you got a young guy, who's, like, interested. And that will be a huge market for that population.
Mm-hmm.
And, the owners of the market, they're all kind of related to each other. They're going to respond by having more produce in there
mm-hmm.
and dairy products and things like that. And so that's kind of a hopeful thing. But there's no school there. There's no way for them to get to school unless somebody's going to drive them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know CUSD, Cabrillo Unified School District, yes, I watch them too. They were just talking about, I'll be putting this out next week. They had a demographic study that they do fairly frequently, and it's fascinating. It is absolutely a fingerprint of the coast. You can see where the coast has gone and where it's coming. And Farallon is going to have, you know, an uptick in students there, which is good because they have the fewest students, and they just redid the whole school. So that's actually kind of a good thing as well. But they didn't come with a traffic light at Carlos. which is a blind curve on Highway 1. And when Supervisor Mueller was, so it goes to the Planning Commission, the County Planning Commission, and it gets approved there. And then it goes to the Board of Supervisors, the BOS. And so at the BOS, you know, the agenda item was introduced and, you know, everybody's going to approve it because everybody wants housing. And Ray said, yeah, we have to approve this. And it's not like anybody had a choice. AB 1449 was just saying you get a rubber stamp it, otherwise you get in trouble. So they approved it. And Ray said, you just bought a traffic light. I just want to make sure that the county understands that it has to pay for these improvements. Mm-hmm. And so that was like a year and a half, 2 years ago. Well, they got right on it. I mean, based on the study that I'm going to put, well, actually, it is up on, it's up on there's a Carlos Street post that I just did. So it is up there and you can look at it. It's highly developed, except for Montara Water and Sanitary District infrastructure. But this is a huge plan. They really turned over every stone, and I'm actually very impressed by it. But again, we don't have any public feedback on it yet. But they have, everybody is forced into this because of the housing element.
Yeah.
And it's an unfunded mandate. The county's going to have to pay for it. The developer doesn't have to pay for it. And when you get into how the developer, like Midpen and Mercy, work, the financial background, that's a whole nother conversation. But it's a tax write-off for some people who are very wealthy. And this is how housing gets done. But I just had lunch with Rich Klein. He's the CEO of Coastside News. And we were just talking housing. And he said that he'd been to Vienna. And he also mentioned one other place, and I can't remember right now, but I had heard a podcast on Vienna housing. 100% public housing. And the design of it is that anybody can live in that. You could be an architect or you could be a barista. It doesn't matter. You get housing. And you can stay in that housing as long as you want. You can buy a second house, but you're going to have to pay like a really, really huge tax on it. So nobody buys a second house.
Oh, see, that's what New York just did.
Mm-hmm.
It's their second home luxury tax.
That's right. That's right. And that's a very interesting mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have that problem. And I'm just on the Coastal Commission meeting yesterday afternoon. And again, they're battling with trying to provide housing in the coastal zone up and down the coast, and it's very difficult.
So I want to say it was Atherton. Some cities and towns have been trying to get like very loophole-y about how they could try to get around the mandates that are being...
Portola Valley.
There
it was, the Cougars. it was the Mountain Lions. And yeah, but to the point is they don't have infrastructure, you know, and they might have a lot of, you know, wealthy houses and stuff like that. And some of the people might be wealthy. But I know in this area right here, there's a lot of people that are living in 3,000 and 4,000 square foot houses and they're living on pensions. Mm-hmm. They can barely take care of their houses. And unfortunately, the criteria for all grant funding is based on housing. And so if you've got big houses, the criteria just reads you as, oh, well, you have enough money.
Yeah, that was something. So the chamber, because we're a 501c6, we do not qualify to apply for 99.999% of grants, even if it falls within our wheelhouse, because we have, based on our nonprofit status, we are allowed to do, you know, just a smidge of government interfacing, which 501c3s are not supposed to do. But that's something that's always at the forefront of any of the groups that are trying to get grants for anything. It could be grants for housing vouchers. It could be grants for food stability. It could be grants for mental health programs. Like, it really doesn't matter what the thing is, but it always comes down to our demographics.
Yes.
And we have here in San Mateo County, and even really highlighted on the coastside, so many high-priced homes and people with high salaries because they work at the Apples and the Googles and the Genentechs, that it skews the bell curve and it makes it very, very difficult to get grants because whoever is providing the grant just looks at this overarching thing. Well, they're the most, the wealthiest, one of the wealthiest counties in California. And then you at the coast is one of the wealthier sections of that.
Do you know where that phrase comes from? What is this original source content that defines us as the wealthiest county? They keep saying that. I don't see it.
I think my understanding, but not original source. my understanding is it's based on the price of homes and then data from salaries. Those two things, and this is the hard part is what doesn't often get taken into account is the cost of living here. So the cost of living here is...
Subtract that from the above.
It's huge,
right? You get a much smaller number.
Yeah, so last I heard, but this was at least 2 years ago, San Mateo County's cost of living, I think it was a salary of like $109,000 was considered low income.
That's correct.
Yeah, and so it's like... Okay, tell that to somebody in Texas or, New Hampshire. Well, I don't know. Other states.
Well, anywhere.
My dad's
else.
Favorite state, Rhode Island. Compare everything to Rhode Island. There's a lot of other places where low income is considered, $40,000, $30,000 or whatever minimum wage is, but there's... Many places across this country where minimum wage is still the federal minimum wage, which is $7.25 and has been since, I think, 2009.
Yeah.
So, so they always want to talk about how wealthy our county is by way of salary and homes, but also the cost of living is so high that it's like, unless you are an, highfalutin tech bro,
yeah,
you're not really living the hot life.
Well, one of the things I like to say, to the county, and to Ray's point, you just bought a light.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're 3% of the population, as we said earlier. That means 97% of the population is over the hill.
Mm-hmm.
They all come here.
Yeah.
They all come here at least once a year. They certainly come here for the pumpkin festival and things like that. They come here for the beach. So we, on the coast side, and this is kind of why I do Coast Side Buzz. I mean, I do cover the news and I have a great calendar and all the music on the coast side, but it's a lot of advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
There's things that go on behind the scenes that you can, push a little bit and inform really, both the electeds and the staff about something they might not know because they're not watching all the meetings that I'm watching.
Yeah. Yeah, there's very few people who have a comprehensive outlook on how, and I think this is highlighted and you and I were talking and there was a meeting a couple of days ago where a couple of different agencies were in the same room and it's like by the time they stop talking or by the time they start going through their lists of projects, between these multiple agencies, there was like 9 or 10 projects that they were even talking about. But then we know of a couple more that haven't even come up. And, the agencies don't always have open communication with each other because they don't think to. They've got their head down. They're trying to finish what they've started or whatever and fix the problem that they have been told they need to fix. And then... But they're not necessarily thinking about, there's 14 other projects happening within a 1 mile radius of our project.
Right.
They might have overlapping goals. They might have overlapping
constraints.
And they might have overlapping construction.
Mm-hmm.
And they just forget to talk to each other.
I think it's culture. And I think with the Army Corps and Caltrans, the Army Corps used to have a policy, Michael Powers, who lives in Miramar, and I think the Harbor District together, they sued the Army Corps, and the Army Corps said, yeah, you're right. Bummer. We don't have any federal interests, so bummer. And they didn't do the math right. They didn't value, the Miramar properties as well. Jim can do quite a good detailed conversation on this. But Jim Pruitt is the general manager for the harbor. And so I think the Army Corps has had a change of heart. They are now interested in fixing the things that they have broken, and that would be the breakwater. So there's a lot of, you know, shucking and jiving with Caltrans and parking in the Midcoast. And there's the California Coastal Commission parking appeal from Catherine Slater Carter and Lynn Erickson that said that Caltrans has to come up with 75 parking spaces to replace the bike lanes. And some people just say, well, don't put the bike lanes in there because the bike lanes are going to stop at Moss Beach. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens. So that the Army Corps has changed because they're coming back in with this Water Redevelopment Act. And we've got a little piece of that. And then they're also helping with the Princeton Shoreline revetment. It's going to be natural adaptation is what they're going for. So when we get back, because I know Noah's giving us the sign, we can talk a little bit about how Caltrans has changed, because they are changing. I got a really good story for you about Caltrans. And do we have, how many more minutes do we have, Noah?
Two.
Oh, I can tell you the Caltrans story. You know how they're doing the multi-asset roadway pavement. They're going to put 4 inches of asphalt down all the way from Miramontes Point all the way to Moss Beach. And in between, there's the Capistrano intersection. Well, if you've driven in the intersection in the last month or so, you would have noticed that it was a lot smaller after they put these little pork chops in. And me as a pedestrian, I was like, yeah, this is great.
Which, and we should note, the pork chops is a little piece of cement that goes on the outside of the crosswalk.
Right. A little protection, just a little bump before the truck comes to hit you. Well, they didn't really measure boat trailers. So General Manager Pruitt calls up Caltrans and said, you know, you're destroying the trailers. Look at all the black marks on your pork chops. And they got right out there and they took those pork chops out. They're gone.
Yeah.
And so now we just have an unprotected crosswalk. But they responded. They responded to another public agency quickly. And I think that's great.
And we will be back in just a minute.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side.
100.9
Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
This is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me and Stan Warren Luttrell coming up at 10 o'clock right after Coastal Windage. We'll have a look at today in history, plus we'll get to a brand new forgotten find. It all happens at 10 a.m. right here from 100.9 FM KHMB.
And we're back. And for the first ever mid-show air quality report, it's still good out there. We're going to switch gears for a second because Michelle was mentioning a really great thing that's happening, I think, this weekend.
Yeah. So Sonrisas, they're a nonprofit dental.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Fix your teeth. And they work with low-income people. They also work with people who have insurance as well. And they have an office here in Half Moon Bay, and they also have places over the hill. And, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, wild animals die because their teeth go bad. And it's really kind of the same thing with humans. My mom, she was raised in an orphanage, and she was depression era until she was six. So she had rickets. So I was raised with a mother who was in the dental chair all of the time. Mm-hmm. And she brushed my teeth and my brother's teeth until we were like five. And I said, I think I got that, Mom. But I have great teeth now, you know, because of it. And so they're having a a fundraiser at La Nebbia Winery, and I have not been there.
Oh, I
have seen pictures of it. It's all over in the summer. They have music there all of the time. And so I'm going to go there for their fundraiser.
Yay.
This Saturday. And there's a few tickets available. There's going to be music and paella. I've not gone to La Nebbia, but I have gone to the Sonrisas paella parties before. Mm-hmm. And they're fun. But I'm looking forward to it, La Nebbia, because it's a beautiful place.
It's a
local family that owns it.
Yep.
And they got flooded out during the 22-23.
Yeah.
And I think they got flooded out another time. It was two times in a row. And I'm covering this story, you know. And I'm like, oh, my God, those poor people, you know.
Because
I just love small business. They're so heroic. And here they are. And they're back. So if you're not doing anything on Saturday night, you can go to my website. It's Saturday night. And you can buy a ticket. It's only $150, but what I say, it is a fundraiser for people who use their teeth.
Yeah.
And if you're going to a fundraiser where you're going to eat paella, you're using your teeth. So I think it's a nice virtuous loop.
Yes, and they do a lot of work with the school district to ensure that kids are getting their teeth checked and make sure that there's no, you know, try to help circumvent
That's
any
right.
early.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I think, to your point about people, I think, often don't realize, like, oh, I got a toothache. Oh, yes. So there is a fact that your teeth are actually very close to your brain. And
yes.
I know that sounds really gross,
yes.
but a toothache can very, very commonly lead to issues beyond your teeth, because they are in such a important part of your body, and they are right there connected to everything else. And
the crazy thing about the insurance system is that dental
and eyes.
I mean, what is that? They're part of your body. It should be whole body insurance, not just like, you know,
everything except.
I mean, our system isn't just nuts.
Oh my gosh. Don't even get me started on insurance.
Right. Okay.
If there was ever
swipe left.
If there was ever an industry that I could personally just take down, it would be insurance or the mandate for insurance.
You know, there's other countries who do this better.
Like a lot of them. Like a whole lot of them.
And it gets back to housing and I think we're in election season right now, so I guess we're going to go there. Coastside Buzz lives for the election cycle. It's not really something that I did prior to Buzz. I mean, I voted and I was, you know,
I feel
informed.
I feel like election stuff and like
it's my Olympics.
Who's getting elected and why and what their platforms are is one of those things that if you're not into it, it's very easy to just not be into it.
Yeah.
But for certain personality types, like mine and yours, it once you like get into it like a little bit, like it's so interesting.
It's a story. It's a narrative.
And it's so,
it's
there's a lot of psychology
Economics.
And like people's personalities and
mm-hmm.
and what are they doing to be a good steward versus what are they doing to, you know, be selfish.
Are they forwarding their own agenda?
Yes.
One of the things,
it's crazy.
It's
cool.
On my website, on the banner, it says click, learn, think, act, vote, and run for office. And It takes all of those steps to get somebody to run for office, and I'm relentless. I mean, there's some people that I've been talking to run for office since they were in their 20s, and now they're in their 30s, and I said, it's almost time.
Yeah.
You got to give back.
Yeah.
In fact, actually, what I tell them, I said, you need to take it back. Because the large part of the problem, that Crystalyn,
yes.
I'm in my mid-60s, and Crystalyn's in her mid-40s, and you'll see that on all of the boards, there's the Mid-Coast Community Council now has 3 people under 50. And so this is a landslide in terms of change. Because every time when you have, I'm very pro term limits. I think people should not be in office for more than 8. And I think you should spend your first 4 years before you run for office, or at least 1 year, watching the meetings, getting to know what the meetings are about, the personalities, even maybe sit down and have coffee with people and show an interest and become educated. That way, when you get elected, you will have enough understanding of process and procedure. You'll know how a meeting runs, et cetera. You'll understand
what's put in agenda. We also will know what you're up against.
And up, yeah, and whether, because almost always people run on one thing that they want to change.
Yeah, something's irked them, so now they're running.
Right, and that's great. It gets you in the door, but you have to understand you have to represent everybody else at the same time and all of the other things. And so I sit down with people and I talk to them about that. And then plus my thank you to my webmaster, Crystalline. She runs my website. And I'm just along for the ride. And but I have a plugin that goes to all of these platforms. So it goes to Nextdoor, it goes to Facebook, and it goes to Instagram. And I've had a huge Instagram bump. Now, the people on Instagram are under 50, maybe over 25. 30. And then if you're under 30, you're on TikTok. I have a young girl in who's the happen to be optometry, and she says, "Are you on TikTok?" And I go, "Oh, I have two posts on TikTok." Okay, I guess I got to get the plug in to go to TikTok now. So you have to be on all these platforms. But out of the four out of the seven people on Instagram, or they knew me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the advocacy that, I said to Coastside News and Emma, she's the publisher and the editor now, I said, you know, and to Rich, I said, let's get out there and, you know, sit at a table and get people to run for office. And and the more we can do that, the more we can get younger people involved. And it is really intimidating for this new generation because they don't have the newspaper on the breakfast table anymore.
But it also would be less, so this is a little bit of my soapbox, is people who... And they may turn out to be good. This is not a judgment of how the person is going to do in the elected position. But one thing that I found really, I don't even have a good word for it. But when I was reading the applications for the people who were running for the MCC appointments, the two positions, and I think they had seven or so applications.
Yeah, two people resigned, so there are two vacancies. That's why their appointments, and then they'll go to election in 2028, but yeah.
Yes. And again, this is not... the people who were appointed, I think, have all the potential in the world to be amazing. The thing I was disappointed at was how many of those applications were submitted, and A, kudos for being honest, but B... Mm-hmm. Said that they had not ever seen a meeting before. I don't know how to jump from I've never seen this thing before in my life. I probably didn't even know it existed, but now I'm going to run to be on it. For me, that is a leap that I don't particularly, I'm not for it. Which is, I think, to your point about people should need to,
Yeah, I mean, we actually had this conversation, and when I talk to people, I really try to encourage them to start watching the meetings now, you know, kind of thing. And then I do sit down with people who don't understand anything, but they want to be involved. I mean, you have to start there. And again, it's like if you're under 50, that generation, because we've got people who have been in office for 32 and 27, 25, 18 years, and I've been working on, I do this every year, is I do term limits, and I also do compensation, because maybe eight years ago, I realized people weren't getting paid not getting paid anything. And at the time, Joaquin maybe he wasn't on city council yet, but Lizette Cortez was on Cabrillo Unified School District. Now, she has a job with the county and everything, but she has a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And who's gonna pay for the childcare?
Yeah.
You know, and the fact is she's got to, like, get out of work and get there on time.
Which...
And all of these types of things that are really onerous for somebody who's still working.
Yes, which is why you end up with so many retired retirement or post-kids people running for these elected positions, because they are... You know, they might have a small stipend, but it doesn't at all cover the amount of time that they need to spend in meetings.
Particularly for city council. I mean, you have all these subcommittees that you have to be on. And it's really, really hard for a working person. And so I think in the next decade, we are going to have to start looking at, I remember talking to a Coastside County Water District director, and he just laughed and said, oh, I just gave that money to my kid for allowance. And I'm like, well, that's cute, but what happens if maybe one of your workers is on the board, mm-hmm. you know? And then suddenly he couldn't not see, he saw it. You can't unsee it. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. And then you suddenly realize, oh, the economics of running for office is off kilter. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have some serious consideration on what we're going to have to do for city councils.
Yeah. But then on the flip side of that.
And the MCC, they're unfunded.
Yeah.
They barely have. Now they got Dave Cosgrave. Oh, Dave Cosgrave is back. Battalion Chief Cosgrave. Department of Emergency Management is back. He's now working for Ray. And he's working for us now in the Mid-Coast.
Yay.
Yay. Ray Mueller, Supervisor Mueller. So that's going to be really exciting news.
But I do think that there is a, and I was just having this conversation with somebody the other day, there is a correlation, I think, between many of our higherly, state and federal electeds who it is a salaried position. It is a full-time salaried position. And especially on the federal level, it's also not, I personally do not think it is good for our country, our county, or our state for people to have being an elected official as their job. Like, there needs to be something in the middle where it's like, it's a part-time job. Like, because what happens is from my perspective, is they end up being a full-time politician, mm-hmm. and then they lose touch with what it is to be a citizen in their district, mm-hmm. right? So I do think that one of the things that does make the electeds that are, essentially volunteering mm-hmm. to do the elected work is because they have day jobs or because they have to think about mm-hmm. where, their next meal is coming from or whatever, it does put them in, many of them, in better touch with their constituents. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it's like, I feel like they're just, if there was some magic middle mm-hmm. of like, I don't want this to be your I don't want you being a politician to be your total personality. Mm-hmm. But I also want them to get paid and not be stressful. There was, when I moved up here, but I was still paying attention to Monterey and Seaside politics, which is where I moved from, one of the Seaside City Council members was actually, it was a bit of a kerfuffle on how to handle it because she wasn't using her stipend for childcare. She was using funds that were being doled out for her to go to like meetings and stuff out of town, right? So there's like gas and room and board and this and that. And she was putting she was, I think, padding it to include her childcare. And so some people saw that as her taking advantage of the taxpayer money because it wasn't called out as childcare or something like that. It was quite a while ago. But mm-hmm. but to your point, it was like mm-hmm. she was expected to go to all of these meetings across California and even just the council meetings themselves, right. which are 4 hours at night.
That's right.
And she had a young child, and I think she was a single mom, mm-hmm. and there was nothing for her.
And no understanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is, like I said, I've seen that in the next 10 years, as the baby boomers die off, you're going to have to address the economics of this issue. And maybe you get paid as a part-time job.
Yeah.
You know, and not... So the supervisors make $150,000 per year, and they each get, I think it's $1 million for their budget, and then they can also use the Measure K funds. Measure K is a 1% sales tax, and I know Supervisor Spear, when she came on board, all the supervisors are using the Measure K money to do anywhere from $10,000 to $200,000 local projects. And I have an AI chat that I mess around with. I'll just say that it doesn't always follow directions well. Mm-hmm. But I asked it to find me out all of the information for both term limits, compensation, and also just anything that I think that I want to understand better. And I think right now we're at a point that if we don't start looking at it and leave the young people something legislatively that can create that citizen response to things, because if we don't have, to your point, you're right, the higher up you get, the less you feel the ground underneath your feet. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why people say you should run for office. I said, no, you definitely don't want me on a board. But when I think about what the policies are that I would, if I were running for president, say, all of the policies that are here on the coast side are the policies that are the national policies as well. Mm-hmm. Housing, cost of infrastructure. At one point, Biden had, you know, the not the brick. There was another big infrastructure bill. I forget what it was. And it was just, see, all of our infrastructure for water and sewer was given to us by the federal government in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And as much as you would like to say that you would like to save up to fix your infrastructure as time goes on, you're reliant on grants. Mm-hmm. The sewers are not, the sewer special districts are not allowed to save up money. Mm. Greg Diegues is, as a corporate, you know, finance MIT guy, I mean, he's a wonk. He's going, why can't you save money? Well, there's probably fraud reasons that you can't save money. But the thing is, if you're doing it for pensions, why can't you do it for your infrastructure? You have to have the same protocols for care and oversight and transparency. But that would solve a lot of problems. And all of that money is in the stock market. So why wouldn't you want to? I mean, I'm economics is my hobby. Mm. And you give me a business problem model that doesn't work. Well, let's see how we could tweak it. So mm-hmm. That's what I would do. I would start tweaking these things so that they do make more sense. And
always wild to me when people harken back to things that were like set in stone in like 1970 and 1980 and 1990, and it's like, bro, we're in 2026. Like, things have changed. Things have proven to have not changed with the times, and how that ends up messing us over.
Right.
And
well, it's like the Brown Act. It's a 1953 legislative act. Mm-hmm. And it was absolutely necessary mm-hmm. for that time. You only have to read the Half Moon Bay Review back in those days. Oh my gosh, the things that they did behind the scenes to get things done. Oh my goodness. And so I think the Brown Act's good. But when COVID hit, we all went remote. We all went Zoom. And I can tell you anecdote, because I watch all of these meetings, I can tell you anecdote after anecdote how many more people come because it's remote.
And I just pause for a second for anybody who's not sure what the Brown Act is. In the short, that is a piece of legislation that was from a lawsuit back in the day where it makes it so that people who are on the same elected body cannot get in a room together and talk about things that have to do with legislation or their area of municipality outside of a public meeting. So they can't get together at each other's houses. They have to plan who goes to what parties and things like that so that they cannot collude.
They can go to events together, but they can't talk about anything.
Yes.
And I know that council members Ruddock, Penrose, and Rarback commuted to the meeting because council member Penrose and Robert weren't driving. And so you get three people driving in the car, and all I can say is that Debbie's helping people out.
Yeah. But, know? I mean, there's very strict rules about what they can and can't do so that they cannot come up with their votes on any particular item before mm-hmm. the meeting so that when they have the discussion in front of the public, it is truly like the first time, or, you know, based on the number of time the agenda items come up, but that their discussion is of the moment.
That's right. And that's such a good point, because I know I'm trying to, there is one agency that always says something along those lines. This is the first time that we've been able to talk about it. Oh, it's Cabrillo Unified School District. Superintendent Miramontes and particularly Trustee Cerneca. He's new to the board, but he's a Stanford guy, so he understands how things work. And he expresses frustration with the Brown Act, as did Greg Diegas as well, because you can't talk about anything. Mm-hmm. You can choose. Now, for me, I try to avoid talking to the electeds very much, just because I don't want to cause anything. But I do, on occasion, have to talk to them to understand something better. But the latest thing for the remote, what was so great was the first time I saw that it was better, it was Montara Water and Sanitary District. It was right in the middle of 2020. People were getting fired and laid off, and everybody was really scared. And then they wanted to introduce their water reliability, you know, tax, which was like $600 a year. And they had to do it because they have a water system that they have to keep up. They're not making money. They don't have anywhere to put it. It goes back into the infrastructure. And the water reliability tax doesn't rely on the water rates. So it gives them a nice baseline economically where they know they're going to get X amount of money for their CIP, their capital improvement projects. And Montara has like, I don't know, 32 pumps. They have different types of pumps, but some of them are $1 million a pop. So 53 people showed up to that meeting. Prior to that, in the history of Montara, no more than two people could fit in the room. Mm-hmm. So now with Zoom, you had 50 people show up. And it was a 3.5-hour meeting. But at the end of it, everybody understood why it was going to happen.
And I think just to cap off the Brown Act conversation, because I do want to talk about one more thing before we end. The Brown Act has actually, since the pandemic, and I think really kicked off by the pandemic, I'm not sure how much it changed before that, but almost every other year, there's some kind of change to the Brown Act. So,
well, the last 5 years, we had AB 2449 was what it was. Now we have SB 707, and that's the one that's going to guide us for the next decade or so.
Yes, and so some of the stuff in there is that the remote option has to always be available. Interpretation is going to have to be available in the languages that dominate your area. So if your constituency includes 30% or more of people who speak natively another language, then you have to include that. So there's some interesting things.
That doesn't affect our city because our city is too small, I believe.
Yes, potentially. Yeah. Well, it does some and not others. But ultimately, it's now gotten into a habit of updating kind of frequently.
Well, there's going to be technology that catches up because with AI, there's a company called Wordly. When I was doing the forum last year, I had to pay like, I don't know, $800 to have Victor's people come in and do the translation. I mean, it was well worth it. I mean, there's only 5 people that used it, but it was well worth it to make sure that everybody felt like they were, you know, they could hear and listen.
Which I've started a conversation with Victor of On Point Solutions because MCC currently has never had interpretation.
That's right.
And I'm sure that there's plenty of Spanish speakers in the Mid-Coast that...
Well,
probably feel left out.
Council member Conte, who just got appointed, lives in Pillar Ridge.
Oh, perfect.
So, I mean, that's exactly why I was so happy that Tony was running, is that he would represent a group of people that has never been represented except for by Lisa Ketchum 2 decades ago.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really exciting.
Yes.
And I think between, translation is getting better and better. And it's very expensive having humans doing it. And you also don't get... We have to translate into Chinese.
And I've learned. It's interpretation.
Oh, you're right. It is interpretation. No, you're absolutely right. I stand corrected.
It is
interpretation. No. It's actually a really important difference because translation is something that is like kind of like 1 + 1 = something. Uh-huh. Whereas interpretation is way more human.
Yes.
And to Victor's point, there is, again, I'm looking at the next 10 years as being almost revolutionary for a lot of reasons. I mean, right now, Coastside News is using AI Locunity, which is probably another conversation. But what was the thing that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, okay. With our last 4 minutes, yeah. I think we need to let people know what elections are going to be coming up so they can start thinking. Because I think for most of them, the... timing to put in your paperwork that you want to be a candidate on the ballot is July.
Yes.
So you really need to be thinking about it now and really deciding and going to the meetings to see what's happening. So for city council, city of Half Moon Bay, there's going to be three districts, and you can visit Coastside Buzz to find out what the districts comprise of.
Yeah, if you go to the menu bar, there's election 2026, and my very first post is about the city council. So it's an updated map showing you who's running and where you live if you want to run.
Yes, and so the districts that are up are Robert Brownstone's district, which is predominantly the east side of Highway 1 from the tip of the Miramar Half Moon Bay line all the way down through Terrace, so just short of downtown.
And that's like what's that road there? Magellan Road? No, was it the Murata Road?
Yes.
Murata Road. Yeah. Where the bridge was out.
Yes. Yeah. So Brownstone's district, Ruddock's, Debbie Ruddock's
district. She's downtown
district.
And she's east of Main Street. And a little bit more, but just you have to look at the maps. The maps literally go right down the middle of some streets. So, and again, we're not at large anymore. And Councilmember Brownstone and Penrose did not run for office because there was nobody that signed up, so they were appointed.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of people in their districts that don't even know that they're in a district at all, let alone who represents them.
And then lastly, Deborah Penrose's district is up, which encompasses like downtown and Main Street.
Oh, I got them wrong. So Penrose, right, is downtown. And then Ruddock is in Arleta Park, that area.
Yes. And I think hers also includes Ocean Colony, I believe.
I'd have to look at the maps.
So there's three spots that are going to be up for city council. So if you live in one of those districts and want to help guide the city in its next four-year chapter. I'm gonna assume that there's somebody from every other, like, harbor and all of that good stuff.
Yes, Debbie Ruddock, I'm looking at the map right now. Debbie Ruddock is everything south of Arleta Park. And actually, it's...
And we should note, if you look up the district map, the districts look wonky because they're based on population. So it's not a the district itself is a geographical area, but how they get to that geographical area is based on the number of people. So the goal is to try to make five districts that each have roughly the same number of people in them.
And so, also have a special interest, you know, if there is a special interest group, that they are represented in its entirety. So you wouldn't want to split Kenyatta Cove, say.
Right. Yes, exactly. So that's how the districts get made, and all of them have districts. So please check out Coastside Buzz. And
stay tuned, because I'll have all the maps coming up in the next week or two.
And if you have ever been interested in steering how the Coastside lives and moves forward, consider joining a elected board.
And if you want to ask Buzz about anything, just contact me through my website, and we can sit down and talk.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you, Crystalline.
And this has been
The Talk
of the Coast.